This episode is brought to you by Blackwall.com for all your site's security needs and Omnisend.com, SMS and email marketing done right.
Welcome to another episode of Expanding the Stack. I'm Zach Stepik here, as always, with my illustrious host, Carl Alexander. It's been a very interesting time since PressConf. You did an episode last month by yourself because I was dealing with severe allergy issues and a headache that wouldn't go away. That episode turned out awesome. But this month, we are going to be talking with Alex Standiford about...
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, definitely a friend of the podcast. And... Yeah, somebody that that I've been fortunate to call a friend, and I know, Carl, you have as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Alex, you you have built Siren Affiliates, which is your plugin for affiliate. Do you want to talk a little bit about that right at the top so we can get into all the meat?
Sure. So Siren is built, I think of it as infrastructure, especially with AI and where it's been going lately and stuff like that. I think that a lot of the tools of the future are going to be things that aren't just, I fix a thing, I solve this specific problem like they used to be. I think we're running into scenarios now where people are at all different skill levels starting to be more willing and able to try to extend things, and they're going to want to create them exactly how they want to. So I've started looking at Siren as infrastructure as opposed to a plugin that solves a specific problem. And it's always been built that way, you know, to be able to do any kind of incentive program that you want. But the key thing there is that means that Siren has to not just be a WordPress plugin. It has to be able to be its own hosted service that, you know, my clients take me on for, right? So I have high touch clients that'll hire me. Basically to consult with them to help them create their sales programs internally at their companies, or if they're running some bigger affiliate programs, right? So I've talked to some hosting companies in the past about doing things along those lines. But it's, you know, any kind of program you can imagine where there's any kind of structure. I was literally just working on this abstraction for a set of walkers that makes it possible to walk up and down a different trees for, you know, downline, upline, things like that. So any kind of program at all, way outside of just affiliate programs, if it's incentivizing, if it's tracked, Siren is positioned to be able to do that. So that's been the big shift there. And as for the tech stack and stuff like that, we could talk about that a little bit later. But it's there's been some pretty interesting things from a tech perspective that I've had to do to make sure that satisfies all the full breadth, everywhere from, you know, a free version of a simple affiliate plugin all the way up to the same with the same solution and the same set of abstractions, all the way up to, you know, a $10 million+ company that has a sales team with different regions, and the sales team has, you know, managers who get commissions based on their sales team's performance, and then there's another, you know, they and all that kind of stuff stacks and tiers, and, you know, everything in between.
You know, if any of our listeners are looking for an affiliate platform, definitely take a look at Siren, and you'll learn why as we talk throughout this episode. Just by getting a bit of a glimpse into Alex and the way he thinks. So, Carl, it sounded like you had a question.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I keep thinking this was like a recurring topic at PressConf, like platforming your plugin, basically. And I keep thinking about how, like, yeah, the, you know, without getting into it, how things have changed in the last few years that just made it like a requirement as opposed to like something people avoided. Because I used to talk about that. When I was talking about serverless stuff, like in Bangkok, like that was 2023, I was like talking about like, why couldn't Gravity Forms have self-hosted and go, like, you know, against Typeform, for example, right? Like customers don't really need to know it's WordPress underneath. Like, it can just be like a lot of plugin businesses are just their platforms, they're just running inside WordPress. So if you take that outside of it, affiliate's a good one. You know, like, you can have an affiliate platform, but it doesn't have, WordPress can just be one integration of it. Like, it doesn't have to run inside of it, right? So even if the platform is WordPress, like, even if the platform is actually WordPress that runs the entire thing, like, it doesn't have to be, like, you know, that was like Matt's dream, like, 10 right. years ago, the when he was like talking about the WordPress OS, when he was talking about WordPress OS, right? Yeah. Like, WordPress as an application platform.
I do think that we are closer to a reality like that than
absolutely
we've ever been in that regard. Like, I'm seeing some things as this is a tangent, but like, that's something I've seen just in some of the things that I'm seeing people contributing and creating. I'm like, man, there's a lot of stuff that is very much not CMS shaped, especially with MCP servers. And it's like the identity of what WordPress even looks like over the next decade is fascinating.
Yeah, I've shed a lot of my WordPress, like, not intentionally, but I've just ended up shedding most of my like WordPress consulting, and the little I have left, one of them is like literally, so Roots has this thing called Radical, which is like a Laravel WordPress hybrid project type, basically, and they run their entire licensing platform on top of that, right? So it's got some WordPress things, it's got like, I'm doing a lot of stuff to migrate a lot of the internals to be more Laravel like but basically but it's a platform, like, it's literally their licensing dashboard, but it's built in WordPress, like, but it could just be Laravel or it could just be WordPress, like, it's, but again, I think the challenge around that, I'm sure you understand, is like the lack of primitives and stuff to like build stuff on top of, you just not having composer support built in, you know, just like, you know, you got to use Roots Bedrock or something to like get that stuff in, is a good example of like things like that, where, but it doesn't change that a lot of people do, you know,
yeah.
Like either they run their EDD licensing platform through that, or like all that stuff, right?
And what's interesting, like what you're talking about, where it is a WordPress plugin and it's also a self-hosted service that can be ran independently. In that case, the self-hosted service is not running WordPress behind the scenes at all. It is built using PHP Nomad, which is my framework that actually abstracts. It's effectively a series of abstractions for pretty much any kind of common operation that a web-based service needs to leverage. And it's built in a way that it uses a lot of strategy patterns and inversion of control. So it's using container, dependency injection, mm-hmm, basically.
Mm-hmm.
With that, basically what you can do is you can build your entire application and not even know what platform or where it's going to end up. And then after it's built, you then create the application, the platform layer, which is what I call it, the different layers, right? So the platform layer, and all that does is it just integrates and implements all of those different strategies, like the database strategy, the REST strategy, the fetch strategy, a cache strategy, stuff like that. And those are defined in an integration layer that then translates all of those strategies into how it would work. So the way that Siren is built literally is the repository is set up to where it runs as a WordPress plugin, but it also runs as a completely separate SaaS with an API and stuff like that. And the difference being, one of them uses the WordPress integration with all those things, and then the other one is using just a series of PHP Nomad integrations that I've created for those individual pieces. Obviously, so it doesn't even have a platform necessarily, it just kind of is its own thing.
Yeah.
So that's definitely where I've gone with a lot of that stuff. And it sounds like it's kind of related to what you were talking about with what Roots has been putting in. They've been kind of on the forefront of Laraveling WordPress for a long time. So I'm not surprised they've gone there.
AI has been a bit helpful for that. I love them. Like, I've been using Bedrock basically for a decade, but the Radical stuff and Acorn and stuff is like very much like, it feels almost like straight up what I like, you know, this is a cool thing, but like, good luck, you know, like,
yeah.
like good luck. And, you know, like I built like a security, like authentication layer that could like, just figure out if you were like Laravel could figure out if you were authenticated with WordPress, like straight up, like, you know, like all that stuff's not, it's not included. Uh-huh. Like a lot is not included. Like they're basically like, hey, we got Laravel to work with WordPress, have fun. And then it's like and a bit of documentation and stuff. So, but you know, with AI and all that, and you know, AI won't save you necessarily. Like this is a good example where AI, like, the jagged edges of AI, like, you know, AI wasn't trained on a lot of like hybrid WordPress Laravel code. No. Like, it's just like, you know, you kind of have to be able to steer it, you know, yeah. Like, and be like, especially at the start when there's like very little like foundational work, like I probably spent a month or two, maybe three, just like building like foundational stuff, you know, like, how to make the REST, like they had like legacy REST API endpoints, but I want to build new Laravel API endpoints, like how to make the two of them work together. Like all that stuff, like, you know, isn't done and needs to be like foundationally built. And then after that, you know, that's why you build PHP Nomad, right? Like you want primitives. And then once you've built kind of a bunch of primitives, I mean, that's why like Symfony components, I think, is like the underdog of like all the PHP ecosystem. Like nobody talks about it. They talk about Laravel and whatever. But like, honestly, like what made all this work is Symfony components.
Basically. And what's funny is I'm finding even with PHP Nomad, every time that I'm working outside of WordPress, not every time, but often, most of the time, whenever I've created the primitive, I'm like, okay, what do I need to use? Like what is the library out there that can integrate this? Because my positioning with PHP Nomad is usually I'm defining the structure, I'm defining how these things get initialized and set up. But whenever mm-hmm. it comes to exactly how it's done, I try to avoid creating like I would never create, like I created a PHP Nomad container class that was like a basic PHP Nomad class that solved that problem for me. I ended up deprecating it because I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this. This is outside of what I should be doing. And I abstracted it and I said, okay, here's how what is required.
Yeah, especially there's PSR function. Container now.
Exactly. So like
So you can just build on top of that.
Exactly. So things like that. What I was getting at though is like almost every time when I'm outside of WordPress, there is a Symfony component that will solve the integration. So like 9 times out of 10, it's like, oh yeah, there's a Symfony integration with PHP Nomad. So that's been kind of accidentally become it. And that has accidentally become what a lot of it is.
It's crazy to me. Like, it's like, again, like I feel like that's like always been the issue with like WordPress, is that they like voluntarily decided that they didn't want to deal with,
be a part of that.
No, it's not even contributing. Like they don't get any benefit back. Like, you know, like my only contribution to freaking WordPress core is finding a performance bug and, you know, God bless Ryan McHugh, but like, you know, like we didn't need a HTTP API. We should have had Guzzle in. And mm-hmm. like, I found like this crazy, when I was building in here, I found this crazy performance issue and it was solved in Guzzle. It was just a, you know, because they're, you know, Ryan's gone, and then we end up with this, and nobody's really actively maintaining it or checking in on like what the actual, like, you know, libraries that are being used every day are doing or fixing, and then that's it, right? So you lose a lot of upstream benefits, right? To me, that was always also a thing, right? Because like WordPress is incredibly self-contained, and that's like an advantage probably, I think, probably for the adoption and stuff. But without even bringing in composer support, you could have just, you know, they used internal libraries before. Like they had PyMailer, they've had stuff. They could have like brought in Guzzle. Like it's just like,
right.
You know, there's stuff like that.
What's funny is on the JavaScript side, they certainly aren't afraid of that. You know what I mean?
No, I know, but that's like the irony of it. Like, it's, I mean, that's like, you just got to accept it. Like,
yeah, I know.
You got to accept that there's like a the PHP gets the whole backwards compatibility thing, and then JavaScript just breaks everything all the time. And that's just the reality of things. I think for me anyways, like, you know, I still think the PHP ecosystem as a whole is like super good, basically. Like just before the show, I saw like Composer, because NPM has been like a crazy freaking vector for supply chain attacks, and then Composer just came in today and they're like,
here's what we're doing,
and yeah, here's what we're doing, and like, you know, soon it'll be like 2FA mandatory for all package maintainers, and they have like all this stuff. And you know, I mean, I linked this thing in post status and nobody commented on it. But like, you know, I remember talking with Patrick Gallagher of GridPane, like when they came out when Anthropic announced like Mythos, right? And I was like, he's the one, like he deserves credit. He was like, he was hounding everybody at Automattic. And he was like, are we in this program? And I don't think we're in it, because like last week, that's what I was like trying to get at on post status, is like Symfony released like a ton of CVE patches at once, basically. And they were all found by Mythos, and they were all like, none of them were false positives, basically.
Yeah, that's the Project Glasswing stuff, right?
Yeah, they were in Project. So, and that was like, I'll give the article to Bob so you can put it in the show notes, like the blog post. But like, you know, they just got one pass at it. Like they were just like, Anthropic was like, you know, like basically sent Mythos into it one time and returned like this, like all these bug reports with reproducible scripts and all that. And they were all, I'm constantly thinking like, you know, why is, you know, thinking of Patrick Gallagher, because Patrick Gallagher was the one that said that the first time. It's like, where is Automattic in all of this? You know, like we're running 40%, you know, like this is a real thing. Like the AI security stuff is like real. Like it's so real. Like I think people aren't freaking out enough yet about it, but like, but on the, you know, GitHub got hacked. All the repos.
You know,
all the repos through a VS Code extension that got fucking supply chain attack. It was just like, it's just maddening. Like, I'm just, yeah. So anyways, it's like, it's the crazy world we live in. The crazy AI world, or crazy AI world now.
Yeah, the Project Glasswing stuff, just to give a little bit of statistic around everything that they've found. There were 23,019 findings. 1,129 were reported directly to maintainers. Then 1,900 additional were reviewed by external security firms. 1,726 of them were triaged, as 90.8% of the 1,900 were true positives.
Yeah.
467 findings from that were reported to maintainers, for a total of 1,596 findings. 1,451 of those were acknowledged by the open source maintainers. 97 were patched upstream and remediated already. And 88 advisories have been published, all based on just running it.
Yeah.
One
Which
time.
Is great for open source. It's also terrible. I feel bad for those maintainers. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Could you imagine that day? Like, but still,
It's hard, because I thought it was a marketing gimmick. I don't know, like a few weeks before the curl maintainer was like, yeah, we got true Glasswing, and like it gave us kind of crap except for one, and the one was like not a very high threat score one. But again, like I think the fact of the matter is that there's just a lot of, you know, insecure stuff out there. Like I wouldn't even, you know, I try my best and stuff, and I think that speaks to all of it. And also some ecosystems are just like less secure by default. Like, sorry, JavaScript, yeah. Like you're a fucking dumpster fire.
Yeah, it always has been. Always.
Yeah,
has.
I know. But it's again, everything with AI is like rocket fuel, right? Like it kind of comes down to like what we were talking pre-show, right? Like it's just everything moves so fast, right? Yeah, like I feel like it makes the JavaScript ecosystem like fastness make it look like a turtle, you know, like how fast things change.
It does. I mean, I just got done in the last week setting up a multi-agentic team through OpenClaw that has personalities and, you know, they respond in the manner that they've been determined to by me. My entire team is based on Dungeon Crawler Carl characters because why not?
Somebody got me this. It was my birthday and I don't really read fiction anymore, but I was told by a friend that reads that this book at least is very good. He said that the new one that just came out isn't as good as the first one, but yeah, it was a troll gift basically. I got Dungeon Crawler.
I like it. I'm a fan, obviously. I wouldn't name my AI agents after characters and base their personalities on them if I wasn't. So there's a guide that is part of the story. He's introduced in the first book, but his name is Mordecai. So Mordecai is my primary agent, and then the rest of the team, design, quality assurance, all of them are named after other DCC characters. So my design agent is Donut, because, you know, Princess Donut is always worried about appearance.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then, Quasar is my QA agent. You know, Katya is my accessibility agent.
Yeah. I don't know any of the characters. I don't know if I'll ever know any of the characters, but unless you do a TV show, maybe I'll watch it when it's a TV show.
It's just really cool to me that that we're living in an era now where I can instill these AI agents with a personality that is based on, you know, these characters from a book series that I love. And
yeah,
they react in the way that those characters likely would in these situations. So it's just fun, and I'm really enjoying being able to set them to a task and then watch them collaborate with each other. And, you know, they come back with a result at the end. But it's really neat to see that. So some of the projects that I've been working on, I've been pretty heavily using AI to, you know, rapidly build functional prototypes of a SaaS app that I'm working on right now. I've been building blocks with AI now that there are MCPs that, you know, can teach these AI tools how to build a block properly.
Doing a lot of that lately too.
Yeah, I mean, building a block with AI once it knows how blocks are supposed to be built is pretty cool.
I actually had a lot of success with that. I used Claude Design just this past week because I'm working on making a course for non-developers to show them how to use AI to be able to actually write code.
Very
without
cool.
necessarily knowing how to code. There's obviously some limits there, and, you know, some things that have mm-hmm. to be considered and stuff like that. But framing it and just kind of giving them some context. Well, anyway, so as I'm building that page, I built it in Claude Design first, and it actually was able to create a pretty good mock-up. And then I have documentation in place that shows how to build those blocks. So what it ends up doing then is it translated them into blocks. It created them. And I actually ended up using some of the libraries, the JavaScript libraries that are built into Gutenberg to help validate the stuff directly without having to open up the editor and stuff like that. So it created this like linter that it's using and all this stuff. It's really cool, actually. It was very clever. So that's been super, super useful. But then whenever it comes to like the PHP Nomad, whenever I'm using PHP Nomad for a lot of the backend stuff that I've been doing related to making sure like what Carl was talking about earlier, where agent doesn't have the context in the background and you're spending a lot of time just putting those pieces together. That's been one of the biggest things that I've noticed about PHP Nomad in the agentic era, right? So before I built it because I wanted to be able to use something on WordPress and also off of WordPress. And then I kind of fell in love with how it works and how it's set up and just wanted to write everything in PHP Nomad. So like I started creating all these integrations. I just created an integration for what's the name of the app that the setup that allows you to run a native PHP. So I just set it up so that it can do that. So now you can run desktop apps with PHP Nomad. But what's been really cool about it as I've been going is AI, because it's consistent patterns, is starting to be able to understand and match, oh, this is the right way to do this, this is the right way to do that in PHP Nomad, because it's documented, it's able to see very consistent, you know, there's this 15 or so different patterns that we use for everything. And we're just going to stick to using those. But then PHP Nomad has a CLI. I ended up creating a CLI that actually has the ability to create, to scaffold code. Using JSON blueprints. So I'm creating all these blueprint libraries that's allowing me to scaffold all these common patterns and stuff like that with JSON. And they're being saved inside of projects. It can be downloaded as packages. And then AI is able to train. It's kind of like you're building like this self-documenting, like the MCP is the code base in a lot of ways, right? So what it's ended up doing is it's like saving me a ton of tokens now, because instead of it trying to figure out how to do it, it's talking in terms of patterns. It's looking at those blueprints, and it's just using them to build, you know, the scaffolding for all these templates and all this stuff. It's been very interesting to see like how AI has been able to impact that too.
If you're building and managing sites for clients, you already know the headaches that come with bad traffic. Bots hitting your forms, scrapers lifting your content, brute force attempts running in the background while you're trying to actually get work done. Blackwall handles all of it before it ever reaches your site. Their product gatekeeper sits at the entry point of your web traffic and filters out the bad stuff in real time. Malicious bots, DDoS attacks, scrapers, all of it stop before it comes your problem. All of it stop before it becomes your problem. They're protecting over 2.3 million websites across 30 countries, and they're trusted by some of the biggest names in hosting. For developers and agencies, the upside is real. Faster sites, less server load, and fewer fires to put out your clients. Check them out at blackwall.com. If you've been thinking about switching email platforms, here's one more reason to actually do it. Omnisend just dropped their SMS pricing and dropped it significantly. SMS now starts at just 7/10 of a cent per message. Not a gimmick, they didn't have to do it. They did it because when their customers win, they win. That's just how they operate. And here's the part that usually holds people back, the migration. Omnisend's team handles the whole thing, automations, templates, contacts, all of it. Done in 5 days, free. So in less than a week, you could be fully set up on a platform that gives you the same power you're used to at a fraction of the cost. We're talking up to 35% in savings. Also, get 30% off your first 3 months by visiting omnisend.com/openchannels.
AI. I mean, maybe we could like shift. We had like an intense AI discussion before we got on that we should have hit record.
You asked me how I was doing, and I said, you know, I'm okay, just dealing with the bi-weekly existential dread that is being a developer in the AI era.
Yeah, and I was just like, I literally just came back from probably, well, I mean, multiple factors, but AI definitely played. I had a pretty big burnout, and definitely AI was a factor like in it. Like I can't, like I was listening to you, Zach, talk about like your open claw setup, and I'm like coming out of this burnout, and like it makes me like
tired. Like I don't want to do that.
I'm not tired, but it was just like, I'm like noping so hard, basically. Yeah, like I'm noping so fucking hard listening to that. Like, and we were talking before, for context for listeners, like I'm not, you know, like, I don't know what people expect, but like, I'm not that AI. I mean, okay, I don't know. I'm not that AI pilled by like the standards of like XD everything app. Okay. Like basically, you know, I'm not using Solo to like have an MCP to spawn sub agents and orchestrating stuff.
You're using it to multiply yourself as opposed to replacing yourself.
I'm basically not. Like, I've largely been single or dual treading it like most of the time. But I start listening to a podcast of somebody like from OpenCode that did a burnout for a month and stuff. And he was saying, he was saying he's on Twitter now on X, and he's like, he can see like everybody, he calls it AI psychosis. I think this is like my autistic linguistic thing. Like, I'm just like, this is not AI psychosis.
No, but, I don't see that either.
But he can feel like whatever, like, you know, if you're paying for multiple codec subscriptions, you probably have an issue. Like if you, you know, I managed to burn out on the $20 a month thing, you know, like it's like it. The problem was like, it's just, it never stopped. Like the one thing that resonated with me is like, it's not that I'm like sleeping with my laptop open. Like some people like you read some insane stuff like on X, like, but I resonate. Like I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, I'd have an idea and I just want to like basically start working on it.
The barrier to entry to do it doesn't take as much, right? You don't have to be in a super strong... Right. So I could just start working on something at any time and I'm not realize how much it's wearing me down and burning me out until I realize that I'm like writing prompts in my head as I'm sleeping. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to like think about this.
I listen to a lot of mostly technical and they talk a lot about AI also. And like that also is making me nope a lot now. But Ian Landsman talks a lot about like how you can go like 100x to nowhere, basically. And for me, I think that was like part of the burnout is like, and I'm seeing it too. Like I talked to a lot of devs like that are outside the WordPress space. Like, you know, like I have a friend who spent like almost $1,000 in tokens in a day.
Yeah.
In a day.
Yeah.
In a day. Like, and he wasn't like trying to game it or anything. He's just like running a whole bunch of agents and stuff. But the cognitive load of that is like insane.
Yeah. And it's invisible. It doesn't, I think that's the biggest thing right there is the cognitive load. People aren't aware of how much, and I was talking, I touched on this a little bit earlier. I was saying that the idea of, as a programmer, we have for the last 10 to 15, well, for me, the last 10 to 15 years of my career has been, even before that, I was a mechanical engineer before I was a programmer. So I've always been a technician. I've always been the technical deep work kind of guy.
Love the mech engines.
Yes. So I've always been the deep work kind of guy. You come to me with the hairy problem and you leave me alone for 2 weeks while I go deep and I disappear and I make it happen. I get it figured out and I solve it and I come back and here you go. That and AI has in a lot of ways inverted that. It changes the inclination, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. So like there's downtime where I will have a thoughtful conversation with an AI agent where I'm working with it. I'm reading what it's saying. I'm trying to understand and I'm guiding it. And I'll say, okay, go do that thing. And then it goes and it churns for 15 minutes, maybe even 5 minutes. That's enough time for me. Stop that and go, okay, what am I going to do while I wait for that? Oh, I know. I'll spin up another agent and think about this other task that I'm working on. And then before you know it, I think Monday, earlier this week, I'm using Linux, so I've got a multi-desktop setup and I had 7 different desktops with 7 different agents having 7 different conversations working on different things that I was trying to take care of at the same time. And don't get me wrong, I'm super productive. I got all that stuff done. I was very happy with it. And it was absolutely more work than I could get done in one day than I normally can.
There's no question of the productivity aspect, but I don't think it's a sustainable 7 hours a day productivity.
And I think that's the caveat that I'm getting into, though, is that no longer is my work as deep as it used to be. And now my brain, I have spent my entire career learning how to work on one thing, go deep, think about nothing but that thing for most of the day, for several hours a day. And that was how I did my best work. To now, AI does not reward that kind of behavior. And it's been a lot of work to get myself starting to retrain myself to be able to work in a more multitasking kind of way. And I'm not completely sure where the line is, what the balance is between my own personal mental health and my own productivity, right? So like, and that bleeds into, because I'm not working as hard as I'm used to, like in terms of mentally, I tend to work longer than I normally would because the signal to my body that I'm tired and it's time to stop for the day is mental fatigue. But my mental fatigue isn't being itched in the same way it used to be. So it shows up in a very sneaky way that's different. It's like a project manager at the end of a day feeling tired because they've been in meetings all day. They're tired because they've been in meetings, they've been vertical, they've been talking, they've been, you know, on all day.
The context switch a lot more.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that versus what it's like for a technician pre-AI or a person who isn't using AI, their exhaustion came from a very different place and it feels different to me. So the consequence of that is I'm not very good at identifying. I'm getting better at it, but I haven't historically been great at identifying those signals. And I think that that was my one-way ticket to burnout over the last 5 months between January and today. I didn't realize it. I was like, oh man, I could do this all day. I'm not doing any of the hard work. I'm sitting there downstairs, like watching TV, and I'm like casually chatting with AI about it, not realizing that I never turned off. And this is just essentially like keeping Slack on my phone. And I'm just having casual conversations with people at work and stuff like that. Right. And I'm pulling back on that a lot. You know, I'm starting to set those boundaries and get a feel for that. But it definitely didn't just, it wasn't clear to me at the time that that was happening.
I think it's still happening. Like, I don't think this is solved. I honestly don't think this is solved because look, I was listening to you and I had a similar, by the way, these are all signs that you might be heading towards burnout, FYI. Like, but basically, so the context switch stuff is real. I don't think I've had a flow state since I've started using AI. I don't think anyone I've talked to that's using AI heavily has been in a flow state since they started using AI.
And I miss it. Oh my God. It's like my warm blanket. I don't get it anymore.
No, I know. And people lament it. And I don't know if it's coming back. That's fine. Like, I don't think, like you said, it's changing the nature of our work. But like, part of the thing that is very difficult is, I was listening to you and I went through a similar process where I remember reading somebody that was like, they were just trying to find prompts that would be long so they could watch YouTube or go like on X and scroll for a while. And I still catch myself doing that.
How do I keep this thing busy so I can go back to what I was doing?
Yeah, but then you said the thing where you're like, okay, I'm waiting for it. I guess I'll just start another one, right? Like, there's like, this is not a solved problem, but I'm just identifying what I think is a problem. It's not solved. But basically, we're stuck waiting. And I don't think switching to doing multiple agents to do the thing is helping us. Cognitively, right? Whether you decide to be productive and make it multiple agents or non-productive and just go stroll on social media or, you know, like sometimes, like right now, like I just put my laptop aside and I'm like playing Diablo and I just go play Diablo while it's running for 10 minutes and like, you know, but I don't think that's correct, right? And I don't think that's solved unless like inference gets like 100x faster, basically.
Yeah.
But they're all symptoms of the same thing, which is like we are stuck context switching all the time, mm-hmm. whether you want to or not. Like you have to wait. Like there's no question that waiting for 10 minutes for it to do this thing is faster than whatever you would have come up with. But I've been trying to do smaller prompts that are faster to do than larger things, you know, so that it, but even then waiting a minute, it's still like your brain's off. Like I'm, you know, like Zach has ADHD. I have ADHD. I don't know if you have ADHD.
Yeah.
We all have ADHD.
Yeah.
It's fucked. Like yes. We need that flow state. That's the only way we're going to get it. And we need that flow state. Yeah. You're like telling you, like, okay, just hang tight for a minute. Your brain's like, nah, man.
No.
There's
no,
a
man.
Fucking squirrel over there. I got to fucking go chase that squirrel. You
I'm
know?
Not like, built for that, man. Yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah,
so and a lot of people aren't, that. Right? And that's like taxing, you know, like.
It's more exhausting than anything. I get exhausted trying to think of what I need to do to make sure that I'm making good use of my time in the meantime.
But that's a sign. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, like, that's like a sign that, like, it's just, there's, I don't have a solution to it because, like, I don't know what to do. It, like, the,
I don't even think, it's okay. I don't even think it has one solution because even from a day-to-day perspective, some days it is completely okay that I'm spinning seven things. If I'm building, like, for example, like I that example that I had on Monday was building individual patterns for a well-defined project for a website build that I'm doing. They were patterns that I'm building in WordPress, already defined. I already have the process down pat. I already did the work to figure out how to do all that, right? So it was literally spinning these seven up, get them moving so that the process can do its thing. It takes a while for them to churn. 9 times out of 10, it's completely done when it's done. I don't have to, it's not an extensive review process. I'm not talking about architecture. I'm not really, I've already made the decisions at that point. That, it's perfectly fine. For the love of God, take that away from me. Make that happen. Spin those plates. I will get so much more done in that day as a result of that, and I can potentially find other things to do in the meantime, such as playing Diablo 2, which is the best of the Diablos, by the way. But then,
I was never a big Diablo 2 fan.
Oh,
like,
no.
But I like, you know, I played a lot of it, but I had friends that were like had bots running, like Mephisto bots, like running with teleport source. And just like fucking just spamming till they get their perfect eagle horn and shit for their alt and stuff. It was just insane stuff.
I still play it all the time. Like almost.
I mean,
almost
they came
daily.
Out with a new class. They're maintaining it. Like, I love it. It's a great.
But the other piece of that is then there's also some days where I, like today, for example, all of my work is very much architectural. I'm having conversations that are like bigger picture things. Like I said, I'm trying to figure out this downline structure. So it's very much one AI chat that I'm having with this one specific thing, and it does feel flow. Like that's about as close to flow state as I've ever come. And I think the biggest trick is
those that stuck waiting for a long time. I don't know. I don't know what you're using. Like I'm a 5.5x high person. So it, and I'm not using slash fast. Maybe I should try slash fast, but it's like
something I'm doing that helps a little bit is I will preload like just Claude AI, like the app, not the code, not Claude code or anything like that. I'll load it on my phone. I'll put earbuds in and I will have it load the context and then I will have a conversation with the AI instead of trying to solve it at my desk. That's been really helpful because it feels productive because I'm walking or I'm doing dishes or I'm doing something while I'm waiting for it, but it's not something that's requiring my brain. And it's like, it's letting me kind of distract myself kind of passively. And then whenever I'm done with that, that information all gets put together in a report that I can then take back to the AI and say, okay, go do this. I'm warmed up. I know what we need to do. Go do it. That has been pretty transformative for me actually, because it scratches a lot of itches at the same time. Keeps me busy during those downtimes. It gets my body moving. So then my brain is actually working better and I'm actually able to think a little bit more. I find myself getting in flow state away from my desk more than I do at my desk right now. It's kind of crazy.
I actually don't mind it for big architectural stuff, like, but it's just when it comes to implementing the big architectural stuff, it just, there's a lot of back and forth. Like, there's a lot of review. Like, I don't, you know, like, yeah, you have Aaron Francis and stuff that, like, doesn't look at code and stuff, but, like, I don't see it. Like, I haven't been able to get it to, like, you know, take off my hands off the wheel kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're there, you're reviewing, I don't have a good setup yet for like doing all those things from one screen. Also, like I just, you know, I think IDEs and stuff, like I still want to go click and code. Like I still want to be in PHP Storm sometimes. Still want to see the Git stuff separately. I still want to chat. I want everything in a big window because I work from my laptop. But I think there's something there, like basically, like, I don't know, like, I feel like everybody I talk to that uses AI a lot is like on the verge of burnout. And I think the context switching is like one of them.
Yeah. For me, my process.
Yeah. One thing we talked about too, that you kind of alluded to is like, and I've talked about it with somebody else, is like, you can go 100x to the wrong direction, but also like, I have no boundaries. Like, you're a business owner, I'm a business owner. Like, you're trying to build a SaaS. Like, there's no boundaries. Like, I'm going to rewrite the Emir runtime in Rust at some point. And it would have taken me months to do it. I would have been able to do it on my own, I'm sure. But it's going to get done. But there's so many of these things, right? Like, there's so many of these things that as a business owner, like, the price of entry was like basically too high to consider. And now, like, you have limitless things of triage to do.
Yeah. I just rebuilt Siren's entire front end to end in React, because it was built, it was like darn near prototyped for WordPress. And it was like, you know what? It's time. I'm going to do this. Let's go.
Yeah. That's what I have to do soon, as to redo the marketing. That's also part of how I got to burnout, basically. Because yeah. Like, yes. you're like, oh, like, let's do this thing. But there's no question it's better. Like, Emir has to manage, I think I'm close to 10 PHP versions. A lot of them have to be built by hand. Like, I had to like migrate like the Amazon Linux version. It would have taken me months if I even been able to, because I don't know compilers enough to debug like compiler errors, which are like inscrutable to somebody that doesn't work with GCC and stuff like that. Like, it just knows them. Like, it knows it. It did it in a day. Like, it would have taken me months, right? You know? And it's just like, there's no question. Like, it's,
yeah.
So you have limitless possibilities, no boundary. Like, that's kind of like my thing out of burnout that I'm trying to do, is like more boundaries.
And I think that kind of touches to like what I was in the pre-recording chat, we were talking a little bit about it. And I think that a lot of the other piece of the burnout is, so one, obviously the insidious thing that I was talking about, but the other thing that I identified whenever I'm thinking about it is also, as developers, we are inherently curious people. We are tinkerers. The reason why most of us are where we are, is because we want to know how things work, how far we can push things, what we can do with them, what capabilities is it unlocked.
I mean, that's why I like AI. Like, I'm not having an existential, because there's two camps around AI, right? Like, there's people that like viewed their code as like something beautiful that they wrote, like kind of like, yeah, the DHH poetry camp, which is ironic because DHH uses a lot of AI, but DHH was always about the coding has to be beautiful, and that's why he loves Ruby and stuff like that. Primogen's kind of like in that. And look, I started coding when I was like six, and like, mm-hmm, I just like building stuff. For me, it's like Legos. Like, my favorite analogy of programming is it's like Legos. I get to build whatever I want to build in the digital world. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, AI is just literally
the 3D printer.
It's like a genie.
Yeah.
It's like a genie. Like, you know, you want it, it'll build it. It'll help you get there. Right. Like, it might not do it well or whatever. Like, it's kind of like the monkey paw in Simpsons, you know, like, right. It's the monkey paw. It's the monkey paw in the Simpsons. Right. Like, it's like you get your wish, but it's like, sometimes it comes like with a side effect, you know, if you didn't do the wish properly. Yeah.
And I think that related to that, the curiosity just made, I know that's what it, one of the big things it did to me. As soon as I saw, I think it happened in like December for me, really, is wherever I saw Claude Code, Codex, and all this stuff really taking off. And I was like, oh my gosh.
I talked about it in my year review. I think like, for me, it was Gemini 3 started being really good. And then Codex came out around that time, but I was just on the Google train at the time. And then Opus, whatever, came out too. And everybody started like being like, okay, this is legit now.
Yeah. So once that happened, I really started, I mean, I was using AI before, but that was whenever I started really using it in the terminal context and stuff. And that just led to a flurry of activity for me. I've probably built five or six different PHP Nomad services, like an internal note-taking second brain kind of thing that I'm sure every other developer has already built over the last 5 months too. But
I have no second brain. That's why I'm like shocked. Like, I don't think, you know, like, I think you can get there. Maybe it's like just my crazy ADHD and stuff. And like we were talking, like the winter that never ended in Canada, but it was just like
all of those things like culminate into burnout, right? I'm going to spend all my time trying to understand this. I'm building a lot of stuff just because I can and I've never done it before. I'm trying to learn what this thing can do. I'm working in a different mode of work where I'm multitasking. Also, I'm still trying to do my job and figure out where this fits into my career. And like all of this, it's just like...
And there's this manic energy.
Yes, manic is a great word for it.
Like it's receding now because I think people are hitting burnout and like... Also, companies are realizing that they can't sustain like how much they're spending on AI internally.
I also think that there's like probably some quality issues they're probably not talking about. Do you know what I mean? That
oh, absolutely.
I think some of the outages, like from some are known unofficially, like AWS had an outage that's like apparently like Kiro like basically overrode some production shit. And then Cloudflare also moves really fast. Like I think some Cloudflare outages have to be like AI generated. Like it's not officially out, but yeah, I mean, that scares me a lot, right? Like that's why I'm like, Emir is an infrastructure product. Like I take this shit seriously. Like, you know, it doesn't change that it's really good. I think the most underrated feature for me of AI is I can just be, because I have to context switch a lot. Like my dream has always been to work on Emir full time, so I wouldn't have to context switch between consulting and all these other things. But I think one of the unintended benefits of AI is I can just be like, hey, it's been 2 weeks, I haven't worked on this, like can you like get me up to speed on where we were? And like that could take me half a day to a day before. Like I was just like trying to remember what I was thinking and stuff.
And again, that's a great example of what I mean about when I was talking about walking. So I'll do that while I'm going on a walk, because it'll be like, I'll be like, warm me up. I want to get back to my desk and start working on this. And I can't remember. I do that before meetings too. I do that before all kinds of stuff. Like it's so useful.
Yeah. So it's good for that. Like I love it for that.
I do definitely feel like I'm around my desk a lot less, which I think is just generally good for my health too.
I mean, I've read that from a lot of people. I mean, this is like maybe a hot take. I don't know. Like everybody is like I said, so manic, but I think you should use AI to reclaim your time right now.
100%.
I think the productivity gain is there, but like this is an interesting podcast that I didn't finish that it's... another person related to Prime Edge, and it's like Casey Montessori. He interviews a AI guy that's been in it for like 20 years, and they talk about the productivity. But the thing is, nobody actually knows how much like productivity this is giving us. Like we know we're faster, right? We're faster at doing stuff, but are we faster at doing stuff that makes more money for the company? Like even for you, for Siren and stuff like that, right? For our business. So like you could just do stuff that makes you more money faster, and it's just that's it, you're done. Yeah, like you just take the rest of the day off, spend time with the kids, go touch grass, like, you know.
And that comes back to what you're talking about with boundaries, right? So that's always been true, but like that's the
so
big
this
thing.
Is what I'm trying to do coming out of this burnout, basically.
Yeah,
like, I'm trying to chill, I'm trying to not be like, again, there's a lot of factors at play, like it's not just AI, but what AI does is it is related, because it's hard to put boundaries when AI removes boundaries.
Right.
So you have to be proactive. It's like kind of like Zach's like, I'm always so impressed, but like Zach's on a weight loss journey. And
91 pounds.
91 pounds. Wow. Congrats, dude. Yeah. Indeed. But like one of the classic things of like, of food is like, don't have in the house, right? Like, yeah. Or stuff like that. Right. But like the boundaries before where you're like, okay, it's going to take me a month to do this or stuff like that. Like now your boundaries are gone. So you have to do a lot more self-work to set those boundaries. And that's hard, right? It's hard when you're having all this external pressure of like, for me, it was like, I support Laravel. The marketing doesn't talk about it yet, but I was like trying to go after like Vapor that's sunsetting. And then at some point I was just like, none of this like actually matters at the end of the day. Like it's just, and I'm just like I'm making myself like sick, you know? So now I'm like, okay, like I work, but I'm trying to go back to where I was before, which is like a bit more casual, set some boundaries and stuff. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard because, again, there's this manic energy. We don't know what our career, you started the podcast, you're like, existential dread about AI. Like, nobody knows where anything goes. So you feel like you have to be running, but we don't know where we're running to.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, we feel like we're running, so we run, but we're like running like headless chickens. Like I say, like, nobody really knows. Like, I'm not convinced that AI, the Sam Altmans and the Darios know exactly where this all ends up, right? So
how could you?
No, exactly. So we're just all kind of freaking out. And like we said, like, everything changes so fast. Like, even the sentiment towards AI coding is always fluctuating. Like, we're not at the beginning of the year where it was like, okay, we're, you got to fucking gas town it. Sorry, I just swore. But like, I was just like, you got to gas town with like, let it rip and all that. Like, now, like, the CFOs are like, wait, everybody spends like $1,000 a day on tokens. Like, we can't do that.
There's going to be a lot of conversations a decade from now that we're going to look at back to this time and be like, oh my gosh, that was crazy. I can't believe we actually did that.
I believe it, Alex. Like, I cannot, like, but again, we're all striving to figure out, like, we're all trying to stay afloat and also figure out where this is going and all of that. So it's all legitimate. Like, it's not like, but it's how do we do that in a healthy way?
Yeah. The good news is, though, this isn't the first time that we as a society or even we as developers have had to experience things like this. Maybe us specifically, I don't know, but like, I read a book called I'm a big fan of the Getting Things Done methodology. So that book and they made one recently for teams. So Getting Things Done for Teams, and it's a more up to date version of it. And I was reading that book, and he's talking a lot about some concepts like holacracy and stuff like that. But he was reflecting on how company structures like entire company structures transformed almost overnight as a result of email. Because email communication existed in the way that it changed everything. It changed the pace of work. It changed how things could be done. And it changed entire company structures. Like, that's even one example that I'm thinking about. Like, you look at how companies are structured today, agile workflows and stuff like that. They can work with AI, but there's entire company structures we definitely haven't explored yet that look nothing like what we even know now because AI exists.
Yeah, I still think it's happening a lot faster. Even if those were fast, like, sure. I still think this is happening like very, very fast.
Absolutely. But the thing is eventually it's going to have to, like, there's going to be a wall that's going to hit there, because you run into, because if you start getting into the point where you talk about company structures and you're talking about things like that, they can, as a company, only move so fast,
I mean, I talked to a lot. If you look at the layoff stuff and talking to people it's all middle management stuff that's being hollowed out, right? Because they're just like, we don't need as much of it because like the middle managers are the programmers now, basically. So yeah, but that doesn't mean that you won't need middle managers in some capacity. But like, I think that like, that's where what you're saying is like, I think companies are being re-architected right now. Like, I think it's already started for that for sure.
It's all untested.
I was talking about that stuff, the like cognitive stuff, at the even my year in review, or I wanted to. Like, I just, yeah, it's just, it's very interesting. Like, I don't know where this ends up. Like, that's why, like, I'm just like, I think the best thing we can do right now is like try to reclaim our time, because like I said, like, I don't, I remember at PressConf there was some discussions where like, there was like some people that were like expecting developers to be like 10x more productive. And I was just like, that's a lot.
No,
I don't think you can realistically like be 10x more productive.
Like, I was already teetering on the verge of burnout before AI. So like, I'm with you 100%, Carl. Like, I'm taking my time back.
Yeah. I mean, I think you should take your time back. I think you're still more productive even taking with your time back.
Oh yeah. No doubt about it.
There's no question, like, for example, the Linux upgrade stuff. there's stuff that it's going to be more than 10x. And there, but again, if it's 10x, but it doesn't affect your revenue, it's not 10x, right?
It's 10x of zero.
You got there 10x faster, but you're not growing your revenue 10x, right? Like it's, so you have to either do with less people, which is a bit of what's happening.
Well, I also think that another thing there is the time that you're gaining back needs to be spent on being, if you're using AI or not, being more thoughtful about the direction you're heading, right?
Yeah. The triage is more important than ever.
I'm spending a lot more time understanding that than ever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Usually, because usually, like my inclination, whatever I did coding in the past was, if I was just doing it by myself, I didn't have a team, I didn't have anybody to report to, and I was doing it my way, the way I want to do it. My comfort zone was, I'm going to start building this, and I'm going to kind of just figure it out as I go. Right? There's going to be some discovery. I'm probably going to do some big picture stuff, but I'm not having conversations or thinking about the big picture of everything. That's gone now. Like if I try to do that same process with AI, with something as you know, programmatically complex as something like Siren or something like that, it falls on its face hard because it will try to do that and figure it out as it goes, and I will spin my wheels and have to, you know, clean up the feed, clean up the conversation, restart, stuff like that. It's way more frustrating. So and that's just in the programming context. That's not even talking about the context of deciding if I should be doing the thing that I'm tempted to be doing right now in the first place. You know, that's why I was talking about that second brain idea and stuff like that, or concept that I'm using and stuff like that. Cause I'm doing a lot of capture. I'm capturing a lot of my thoughts and stuff like that. I'm using AI to do a lot of journaling where I'll talk to it and I'll say, okay, this was great. Make this a journal entry and save it in this place for me so that we can come back to it later whenever we're conversing, and it'll reference that stuff. And actually, I got my ADHD diagnosis this year because of that. I was journaling and talking about my frustration about being so all over the place in terms of I'm having more trouble than ever focusing, and that and all these other things. And the conversation, it led to me just really frustrated about it. And it was Alex, I'm looking at these things. I'm looking at these patterns. These patterns are a sign that you might want to go get an evaluation on something, right? I don't know what it is, but you might want to go get an evaluation. And I kind of already knew, but I did. And it was just I don't know, man, that's one of those things where it's just the low key, transformative thing that isn't being talked about.
I wrote a whole thing on that in my year in review about using it on top of therapy and to figure something off and stuff. Yeah. It's just in the context of work where I'm I don't know where it's shifting the balance, and it's where do we end up? One of the things that I'm not sure is the 7 hour a day, you know, how sustainable it is with this.
It never has been.
No, it's never been, but
I've never been able to work for 8 hours a day. I've been able to barely do six.
But there's corporate we're all self-employed here. So I'm thinking for my friends and stuff that are in a corporate environment where there's expectations around AI, but there's also expectations about how much you should work per day and stuff. And some of it is just, there's a lot of meetings and stuff maybe, but it is very demanding.
Yeah.
And we lost, on top of the flow state, we lost a lot of just easy work.
Yeah.
That we could shut our brain off and do.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And we're AI kind of left us all with only the hard stuff to do, right?
That's really true. That's a great point.
Yeah. And I'm just always an observer of this stuff, but I've always been fascinating from when I applied for my MBA about work culture and the workplace and stuff. And I just keep thinking about this idea of the 7 hour a day doing this really high cognitive work. And I'm just where there's no more kind of breaks. And and then you read people that are prompting their agent while they're in a meeting or right before a meeting. And it's just yeah, that's why I'm the burnout thing, I think, is going to show up more and more, is my educated guess, because I just don't think we're in a sustainable phase right now. And there's the whole dopamine aspect we kind of talked a bit about it too before the, oh my God, Bob's going to kill us, but it's so long, this episode. But the dopamine, the dopamine aspect of like AI too, like it's like slot machines,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, it really is.
So that's real too, right? So there's just all these factors where I'm like, I was very curious even at the end of the year and as the year was starting, like where it was going to end up. But like I thought I was good. Like I literally thought I was good. And then I'm like collapsed. And like I said, like I was just like, I don't feel I was like the most AI pilled of all. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm not Zach with an open claw team or you who's running a bunch of agents. Like I was running at most two or three.
Yeah.
Even then, my brain, like I talked a lot about it in therapy, and I think we can, all three of us can relate to this. I couldn't shut my brain off.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm not kidding. I wasn't joking when I said I was literally dreaming in prompts. Like when I was at my worst, like I was like, holy crap, this is bad.
This can be an entire fucking funny, I don't actually have dreams. So yeah, I think it's a blessing actually.
Yeah. But like, I would wake up, and I would be like, oh my God, did I actually write that in AI? Like, I would like think that I was talking to AI. Like, it's insane. That was the weirdest.
But I would just wake up and I'd have an idea, or I'd be like, oh, I want to keep working on it because like I'm having so much fun. And the same way slot machines can be fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Like the same way playing poker can be fun. It's
the only difference is now sometimes the stuff actually gets done.
Absolutely.
And it gets done better. Like 5.5 is a lot better and stuff. Like I get it, but
that also kind of makes it more dangerous because I know it can get done in a night.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's why the boundary setting I think is super important. I think like being able to do that is so key.
On the topic of the 7-hour, like the work week and stuff like that, I have always doggedly fought against the notion that the office job should be in an 8-hour. I've been fighting that since 2010, right? I've always thought that was dumb. That's the whole reason why I work from home. That's the whole reason why I work for myself, all that stuff. But like,
yeah, same.
I've never, and honestly, I don't even believe that most people who are working in an office 8 hours a day are truly working for 8 hours.
But the funny thing is I probably worked more than 7 hours a day, like during this phase, right? Like I was working like legit, like 7 days a week.
Yeah. 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Like, yeah.
I was like, I enjoyed it more than playing video games. I was not playing video games. I was not doing anything.
Yeah.
I was going to the gym. I was eating and I was coding. I was doing those three things for 5 months, basically. And I hated life because it was fucking winter in Canada. And it was like the worst winter it was like one of the worst winters like in my entire life, basically. That's all I had to do. And my brain wouldn't let me do anything else. Like, it wasn't even like I was like not enjoying it or like, but it was just, but there's like this, like I said, it's, there's something, right? Like there's an addiction, there's a dopamine, there's the fun of being limitless. Like, again, I think I'm sure you could say that, Alex, like if I wanted to, I could work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, for the next year, and I would have stuff that I want to do for my business.
Yeah. That'd be true with or without AI, but it would be more true.
It'd be true without, but it's crazier with AI, right? It's crazier with AI. It was definitely true without AI, but before AI, you'd be like, yeah, okay, but I can't, like, or I just don't want to spend a month, like, you know, I don't want to spend 3 months learning Rust and writing my runtime in Rust.
But here's the interesting thing is like, I knew then, this is what I mean about limits, right? I knew then, before AI, where my burnout point was. I knew what the signs were. I knew how far I could push. I knew I could do like a really hard sprint working on nothing but a coding project for like a month, maybe 6 weeks. And after that, I knew that there was a cost. I would be burnout and I would have to have a few weeks.
I feel like you're like me. I talk about it in therapy.
Yeah.
I'm like Icarus. I'm like, how close to the sun can I fly?
I have to know. And I have to, and that's what happened here at the beginning of this year. Absolutely. So what I'm finding, okay, now I know AI, it took about double the amount of time before I was in that same state. And it's like, okay, but it was worse in so many other ways. And there's other consequences of it, of a thing like that going longer, right? Like a 4 to 6 week period, I can put it on my calendar and I can say, okay, that is like post Christmas to mid February. Nobody's doing anything anyway. I can do something, recover, and then be ready for spring. But like a longer sprint like that with AI, it's just, I don't know. It's limits, just learning those things. And I think that that's been a lot of what, for me, that's what I keep coming back to.
I know. I'm so well acquainted. I joke that me and Burnout are like very good
besties,
friends.
You know? Yeah.
Like I talked about it before press conf, but I was so sure I dodged it. I mean, it was a bunch of factors. It was hell to come back from press conf. I got like stuck on planes, stuck in Atlanta, stuck there, you know, but my therapist was like, yo, you were talking about how close you were, like right before you left, you know? So like you didn't gouge things per, that's the thing about being Icarus, you know, you get the numbers off and then poof, you fall back down. So, but yeah, no, it's like, it's, yeah. So I think we should like wrap this up for poor Bob.
Probably.
yeah, it's so good talking with you, Alex. And
always,
as Zach always says, where can we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at alexstandiford.com. That's the primary place where all my content and stuff is published. You can also, of course, find me on X and on LinkedIn. I'm cross-posting most of the content I publish on there as well. You can find me on Mastodon directly. If you go to my website, you'll be able to connect with me there. Those are the primary ways. Of course, you can always check out Siren at sirenaffiliates.com. That's where I'm doing most of my work. Most of my energy has been going into that.
Right.
All right. All is great having you on, Alex.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Again, thanks to our sponsors, Blackwall.com and Omnisend.com, for their continued support. Until the next time, take care.